Studio KQEN weather forecast. Today, sunny and a high near 86 degrees expected. Tonight, clear and 53 for a low. Tomorrow, sunny and 80. Thursday, sunny and 84. And by Friday, sunny and a high near 90 degrees. Currently, it is 81 degrees. KQEN news time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We cover a lot of different topics on this program, but occasionally do something just a little bit different, and that's what we're going to do today. Talk about agriculture in Douglas County during the summer. A man outstanding in his field, though he's ducked inside for lunch, Evan Cruz out at Cruz Farms. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Happy to do it.
So talk about, well, first of all, what crops are you growing this time of year?
Well, you know, as far as harvesting crops, this is kind of the peak season for things. We've got basically everything in swing, except for the early season berries that have finished already. And we're still waiting on, like, apples and prunes to come on. And then the winter vegetables aren't here yet as well. So, you know, corn, boy, just if I look out my window here, I can give a tour. Corn, beans, tomatoes, peppers. We've got a lot.
Wow.
We've got melons, summer squash, cucumbers, zucchini. There's a lot of stuff we're picking on a daily basis for the market.
Are there? Is this the busiest time of year for farmers in the Umpqua Valley?
Probably not. The busiest time of year, at least for me, is definitely the spring. So starting whenever the weather lets us in April through mid-June, you know, it's just a race to get as much stuff done as you can. And this is actually the time of year that, even though we're harvesting a lot, I get to breathe a little bit. There's other people like our grape growers in the area who have their busiest time of year around the corner, but it's not here yet. And then, of course, ranchers and stuff tend to be a lot busier in the winter than in the summer. So I would say the biggest determination on how busy you are is how much irrigation you have to deal with.
So what is an average day like for you this time of year?
I don't have average days ever, and that's one of the things I like about this is I rarely do the same thing 2 days in a row. You know, we have field crew that pick stuff, and we have certain things that we pick in the morning when it's cool, and then other things that are more durable that we can pick in the afternoon, and I guess that tends to be a little bit of a cycle, but like for me, the past few days I've been delivering, we just finished up a 50 ton delivery of small hay bales, and all those have to be unloaded and stacked by hand in the barn we go to. We deliver to some places that the big trucks with, you know, forklifts and stuff can't get to. So that's all a hand unloaded delivery. But that doesn't go on too long. We're growing a sugar beet nursery on about 40 acres this year, and that was just planted. So there's a lot of care of the baby sugar beet plants this time of year. But it's very dynamic, and it's never consistent. So some days I'm changing irrigation. Some days I'm in the shop working on things that other people have broken. Some days I'm changing irrigation. You just never know.
So what time do you get started in the morning?
Oh, between 6 and 7, usually a little bit towards the earlier side of that. But, you know, a lot of the stuff I'm doing this time of year, I actually have to do fairly late in the evening. So I shift my day a little bit later. Our field crew starts at 6 because we've got so many things that need to be harvested before the heat of the day. So they start early, usually picking corn. Picking corn early in the morning makes a big difference in its quality. And then there's fragile things like peaches that have to be done. But I actually have some stuff that have to be done closer to sunset or right after the sun goes down. So that makes for a later day. So I might not start as early the next day with that.
How late into the evening do you tend to work?
You know, I try to spend a little bit of time with my family with some regularity. So, you know, getting off at 6 for dinner is good and then take the evening off. But like I said, I've been doing some things lately that have been from, you know, after dinner, 7 to 9, 9:30 at night as well. So, it's not consistent. The nice thing is I don't have much of a commute. It's about 30 to 40 feet. So it's not like it's an inconvenience for me to hop out and grab another couple hours here and there.
So you've been working from home long before most people then?
Probably.
Yeah. So we're behind in rainfall. How is that impacting crops this year?
Well, we've been pretty lucky. The majority of what we grow is on irrigated land that has really good water rights, or we have contracts for water out of Galesville Dam. So obviously the amount of irrigation is labor intensive for like the sprinkler pipe you see out in the field. You have to move those by hand. Even the big sprinkler that's running down below the market, that isn't quick to move. So that drives a lot of our schedule when a sufficient amount of water has fallen down and we've got to move that. Although I do have to say, irrigation, not only the labor to move the pipes is expensive, but to run the pumps is expensive. So we try to do as little as possible and use other practices to conserve water. So like this year, all of our melons and summer squash and zucchini and tomatoes and peppers and a few of the smaller plantings of things like kale and herbs are all in a drip irrigation system that's under plastic mulch that helps to kind of maximize the use of that water.
Has the irrigation systems, have they changed much over the years?
There are a lot of options. I would say that there are a lot more options for larger farms. If you go over on the east side, even some of the farms up along I-5 in the Willamette Valley, you'll see the big overhead, some people call them pivots or linears, where the irrigation is pretty much automated. It takes a fairly uniform size field to do that, and we don't have any rectangular fields at all. So that type of thing isn't available to the way we farm. But yeah, there have been a lot of advances in irrigation. Drip irrigation is a huge opportunity to save labor, and actually it doesn't just save labor, but it reduces the amount of acres you need to grow a certain crop. They tend to yield quite a bit higher under drip irrigation per acre. So what that gives us an opportunity to do is use less of our land in this intensive farming mode and give it a longer break with crop like alfalfa or grass hay and really maintain the quality of our soil.
So do you need to irrigate all the crops?
We grow a little bit of alfalfa dry land, so that's only rainfall irrigated. Alfalfa is a crop that will grow extremely deep roots in good soil, and we have good soil, so it grows extremely deep roots there, and we get pretty good yields off of it, although the yields don't compare to where we irrigate. Whether or not it's more profitable to irrigate is another question because of the cost of irrigation. But the majority of what we grow for fresh market sales is irrigated. The only time it's not irrigated is when it's harvested in the spring early enough to not need it. So like the first planting of green beans we did this year, I don't think I had to irrigate those. Just rainfall got those by. If I did irrigate them, it was just once or twice.
How many acres are you using for the farm this year?
Well, we're about 470 acres, somewhere on there. We've got everything growing. I mean, it's all planted one way or another. Some of it is set aside in preparation for next year. So I'm doing like a summer cover crop in it to boost the soil and give next year's plantings a better start. But it's all in production, and only a few of the grass hay fields that we're dealing with are, you know, in the past. Everything else is still something I'm dealing with this year, this current season.
Talk more about these cover crops, what they do, and what you're growing there with the, you know, what the cover crops are, I guess.
Well, there's a few different things you can do for cover crops. We cover crop pretty heavily over winter. Soil really wants to be growing something year round. That's the best way to keep the microbial colonies up and active in the soil. And living soil produces, I believe it produces healthier crops. So we use different stuff based on what we need. I've been using a clover. It's a hybrid clover called Fixation Balanza that puts down an amazing amount of nitrogen, which greatly reduces the amount of fertilizer we have to use for the next year's crop. And, you know, a cover crop is something that you plant and you don't intend to harvest. So it's a complete investment in the soil. There's some other things that we're growing that have some cover crop qualities to them. So they will improve the soil, but I can still take like a teff hay crop off of there for baling as dry hay, and horse people seem to like that quite a bit.
All right, going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. Evan Cruz, we're talking about agriculture in Douglas County in the summer. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1246. Back in a couple minutes on Inside Douglas County, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson coming at 1 on tomorrow's program. Superintendent Jared Corden of Roseburg Public Schools. An update on the reopening plans for RPS this fall. As things like that and just about everything else seem to be evolving right now, we'll check in with Superintendent Jared Corden to get an update. Well, we're going to talk again about agriculture in Douglas County. A bit of a unique program and kind of fun to switch topics around a bit. Evan Cruz out of Cruz Farms, outstanding in his field, but literally taking a break for lunch this afternoon. What about, you're growing all these crops, and you have a lot of things that are in the marketplace right now and the produce stand. What are some of your favorite ones personally to enjoy for lunch or dinner?
I would say probably cantaloupe is our family's favorite. We actually eat it many different ways. People probably don't think about using cantaloupe in a recipe other than like a melon fruit salad or something. But we have several recipes we like. And to me, peak summer really shows up when cantaloupe harvest starts. So that's going on now, and we eat a lot of cantaloupe. So I would say my second favorite thing is when carrots happen, and for us that's quite a ways away. We plant our carrots a little bit later, so they so we begin to harvest them right around the time we start to get some frosty weather, and that really sweetens them up. So usually mid-October is when we're looking out for carrots, but they're growing now, but they're not available in the market yet.
And obviously corn is a big favorite for many people this time of year.
Yes, absolutely. We grow, other than alfalfa, corn is our largest acreage crop. And I spend quite a bit of time on corn. It does take quite a bit of water, and we have to use that big sprinkler for it to get over the tall corn plants, it's labor intensive there. It's pretty quick to pick, but we've been picking for over a month, I believe. Right around a month. And this year, if we don't have any early freezes, we should have corn well into the fall.
And I know a lot of people like it that fresh to come out and pick it up, knowing that it was picked that morning versus being at one of the retail stores where who knows where that corn came from.
Corn is an interesting plant when you really dig into how it works and you know, what it's trying to do with actually producing seed itself. But corn has an enzyme that converts the sugars into starches, and those enzymes are suppressed when it's growing on the plant. But once you pick that ear, those enzymes kind of kick into action. So getting fresh corn really is a major part of the quality of the corn. So, you know, picked when it's cool keeps those enzymes from kicking in. So we pick it early in the morning. We get it in the cold room right away and keep it cold. But it does make a big difference in having corn that is hours old rather than days old.
What's the difference in... you see corn where it's all yellow, and then there's the other varieties where it's yellow and white. What's different there?
There isn't necessarily a difference in flavor. They're different varieties. And so corn is a unique plant where it takes two pieces of pollen to land on each silk, and each silk is connected to a kernel. So when you open up an ear of corn and see, you know, the tip isn't filled out all the way with mature kernels, it's sometimes a deer came along and munched the silk away before every piece got its pollen, but two pieces of pollen. And so basically you're just dealing with pollen carries the coloring trait to it. And so in some varieties, the pollen has yellow or white genes, and if you get two yellow genes, you get bright yellow. If you get one yellow gene, you get kind of dim yellow, and two white genes, you get a white kernel.
You mentioned deer, and this happened to remind me when I came in early this morning, and I'm right in town. Actually, as I backed out of my driveway and started to go forward, there were deer standing in front of me, right in front of the house next door.
Yeah.
And that's a little unusual right off of Harvard, but I'm curious the impact that you have with deer on your farm.
Deer can be a problem for us. We have, I guess the most common way that we compensate for deer damage is sometimes we just have to plant more of a crop than we need, knowing that the deer are going to eat, you know, the lower corner of a field and of, say, beans, and we won't get to pick that corner of the field because they munch on it so much that the bean plants don't ever produce anything. But deer definitely can bother us in many ways. I would say the Canada goose is also a major wildlife bother. In both situations, there isn't very much we can do about it other than kind of plant extra. And like I'm training my dog to flush geese out of a field. He's a young pup, but he enjoys it, and it at least reduces the damage that the geese cause when I see them, but it still feels like a losing battle sometimes. So the only way to compensate for it is to plant a little extra.
So what's the issue with the geese? Do they come and nibble on things too?
They're looking for feed, especially this time of year. They're trying to fatten up for their migration, or, you know, to survive the winter. We've had flocks of geese come in and destroy a couple acres of corn seedlings. They don't always do it, luckily, but it's happened before. One of their favorite things to do is to go into a melon patch and take a bite out of every melon when it's about golf ball sized. And it actually makes the water, or the cantaloupe, they like cantaloupe, it makes it grow and kind of look like the Death Star with a kind of a crater in the side of it. And people don't like to buy funny looking fruit. So a lot of times we just don't pick those. Even though they're perfectly good to eat, the damage happened when it was very young and it healed and outgrew it. It still is a damaged piece of fruit, and people don't tend to enjoy that as much.
Now, is COVID-19, has that had an impact on farming this year?
I would say our operation was very minorly impacted. You know, we had some of the regulations that we had to put in place. The market was impacted in a way similar to the grocery stores, and we've been operating under those. But as far as going in the fields, we're already a pretty socially distant crew with the way we work. We don't have very many employees out in the field. A lot of the work we do is already separated. So not a big deal for us. I know other farms dealt with it in a much bigger way.
All right. Evan Cruz outstanding in his field out at Cruz Farms this afternoon. A look at agriculture in Douglas County. Evan, thanks for being on with us.
No problem.
1257 and News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.